Thanks for listening to the Entree Leadership Podcast. If you're a small business owner and you love this podcast, then you definitely want to check out our Entree Leadership Master Series event. Dave Ramsey personally teaches this event here at our office in Nashville, Tennessee, so you can meet with our team and see behind the scenes of how Dave runs his business. Registration is open for the next event the first week of November. Check out EntreeLeadership.com to get your seat locked in today.
Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is a place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership and business. My name is Chris Hogan, and I'm excited to host yet another great episode for you today. On today's show, we're going to talk about the two areas that I think are very important for leaders and business owners. We're going to talk about these two things that I think are so important for us to make sure that we have in our business as well as with our team. Those two areas are excellence and passion. Again, excellence and passion. I think those are two things that are overlooked. We can get busy with things. And so it's so important for us to look at the excellence side and the passion side, what we're bringing in. Now, we also have a guest, Mark Sanborn, today with us, and he's going to join us for the interview to talk about his new book, Fred 2.0, which is really focusing on going from the ordinary to the extraordinary. So I think you're going to enjoy that interview. On the last episode, we had Dave Ramsey join us in studio, and it was an honor to hear from the man that started this Entree Leadership process, to hear from him directly, to hear his heart, and that was an honor. But Dave also had another guest then, and that was John Acuff. John Acuff was on talking about his new book, Start, which is really focused on punching fear in the face. How do you go from average to awesome? And so I think you're truly going to enjoy that as well. Today's podcast lesson from Dave is going to be on passion, that area that leaders and business owners have to get back to. You have to get that back. You have to look at it and understand, why are you doing what you do? Who are you trying to provide for? What are you doing? And it'll help you stay motivated and stay connected. You see, passion creates momentum. It helps us get going. It helps us to push forward. Passion also sells. So if you have people on your team that are talking about a product or a service, it's important that they have passion when they're talking to the customers. You don't want them mumbling. You don't want them stumbling. You want them to care about what your product or service does. And lastly, the important part of passion is that it leads. Everyone wants to follow someone that's going somewhere. You don't want to have somebody that's just not sure or unclear. You want to have somebody that's fired up and wired up to go somewhere. And so today we're going to have Dave's lesson on working with passion.
Develop a crusader mentality, another way you create momentum, another way you get marketing moving. Build your team, build in your team a crusader mentality. Some of you started your business because of something bad that happened to you and you never wanted to happen to anyone else again. You need to share that with people. You need to go there. I met this kid that works in the Hispanic community. He does a great job. Javier is his name. He was one of the original four Menudo. Remember those boy band, Menudo? Yeah, he was one of those four guys. He made like 400 grand. He's 18 years old, and somebody stole all his money. So now he's in financial planning. Works with entertainers. Keep people from stealing their money. Sometimes stuff bad happens to you. He's a crusader, man. He can't stand crooks. He doesn't just merely dislike them. He can't stand them. Passion. Passion creates momentum. Passion creates marketing. Corporate America's forgotten that. They give you dry, plastic, crackly things. One of the reasons, not all big companies have. When I say corporate America, it's the ones that are dead. They have no soul. But you know, you take like Apple, you got to love how they get after it. There's all kinds of great companies out there that have passion about what they do. You may not even agree with them, but at least they're passionate. Passion leads. Passion gives the entree leader and his team the willingness to pay a price, the willingness to sacrifice the win, the willingness to get up again when you got knocked down. These are marketing principles. Weird, huh? Passion creates the last needed ingredient to make great marketing stew, and that's activity. You got to have activity. In marketing, there is no substitute for activity. Theory will kill you. Get up. Leave the cave, shoot at stuff. Nothing dies unless you shoot at something. Shoot at it. Throw a rock at it. Get a club. Get a bow and arrow. Get a machine gun. Drop an atomic bomb. I don't care. You got to get out there and move stuff around. Nothing moves unless it's shoved. I don't want to hear about your freaking theory. Make some phone calls.
Well, I made three calls, and those customers all had this objection. We need to adapt our product line.
No, you need to get your butt to work. Three calls, and now you're my marketing consultant. Get in there and make 350,000 calls, and then you can give me some input. Three calls. Give me a break. There's no substitute for activity. Bust it. Activity creates options. Options equal increased potential customers. Options lower pain. Create options. Lots and lots of options. Options don't come from anything but just energy, passion, and activity. Bust into the market. Try new stuff. Move things around. Make calls, make calls, make calls, make calls, make calls. Well, that industry didn't work. We're going over here and sell our stuff. That one didn't get it. We're going to find somebody that gets this. We're going to just keep going out there. Just keep moving, keep moving, keep moving, keep moving, keep moving. Activity creates diversification, and diversification equals increased potential customers. It's hilarious to me that all those years ago when we started, and the very first time I ever spoke anywhere, I put some of these books at the back table, and I asked one of the volunteers at the Rotary Club to stand by them so no one took them. And I spoke with my little overhead projector and my chains and my little scissors. And I finished the talk, and I went running back there so I could work the book table. And people would come along and they would look at the book and they would go, well, you tell people not to borrow money and use credit cards? That's weird. You're kind of a wacko, aren't you? Yeah. But it'll work. Yeah, probably will. I don't think I want one, though. I would go home with my feelings all hurt. He didn't like my book. He called my baby ugly. He doesn't like my ideas. He thinks I'm a fanatic. And now we can bail the hate mail, the number of people that think I'm a moron, and I've sold almost 10 million books, and so I don't care anymore about what you think. You're wrong. How is that hard? But, you know, when you sold one and one's mad, you have a 50% mad ratio. When you've sold 10 million and, you know, 100,000 are mad, you don't care. Jump in a creek, you're wrong. 2% of the public should be institutionalized. So, you know, it just changes your perception. Diversification equals increased potential customers. By having many, many, many potential customers created by activity, you increase your chances for an explosion. By having many, many, many potential customers created by activity, you decrease your chances for failure. If you call on two people, one buys and one doesn't, you got a 50% failure rate. Activity allows for small, non-fatal failure because it doesn't hurt as badly. Timidity fails. Go make the mistake of tons and tons and tons of activity. Compressed time frames. Do 2 years worth of effort in 90 days. I tell our new salespeople that all the time. Listen, don't get in here and play around with this. Go ahead and figure out what 2 years worth of work looks like and do that in 90 days. When you take that much effort, that much energy, and you compress it into a small space, from a chemistry perspective, it explodes. That's how a diesel engine actually runs. Compression. There is no spark plugs.
That was a very powerful lesson from Dave on the importance of having passion. I think the three takeaways from that are, one, you've got to have a crusader mentality. You have to know that your product or service is doing something for someone, and you have to believe in it. I think understanding that passion leads, that people need a leader that is wired up and fired up to go in a direction. The other thing that I think passion does is it creates options. Now, you think about that, options. It gives you a choice later because you are moving in a direction. I can remember working years ago with a gentleman that owned a dry cleaner. And his business had gotten a little stale. To be honest, he had lost his passion. And he was working with his two sons in this business. And as I talked to him, he had lost his enthusiasm. He had lost his drive for the business. But when I talked to him, he told me the most important thing for him was to get this business going again so he could pass it on to his kids. And as I talked to him about that, he got more and more excited. But see, he'd become defeated because he had had some obstacles. He'd had some situations. He had lost contact with the business.
But in talking with him about that passion, his desire to pass that business on, he got energized. He got excited. And what we did was talk about how can we take that excitement to pass this business on and connect it to the day-to-day things that he had to do to develop and grow that business. He had to get reconnected with potential customers. He had to take care of his current customers. He had to start thinking that his business was going to become what he desired it to be. And so for him, as he got excited, his kids got excited. And I can tell you, they turned things around with that business because mentally they had made a turnaround. And then they were able to have their actions follow the direction that their heart wanted to go. They had their passion back. And I can tell you, having their passion back is going to lead to higher ground for their business. So regardless of where you are in your business, get your passion back. Think about who you're working for. Who are you providing things for? And who are you trying to take care of at home? I promise you, if you get your passion back, you're going to see things happen because then it starts in the mind and then you're able to change your attitude, but then you can have your actions follow. Switching gears, today we have author and speaker Mark Sanborn joining us on the podcast. Now, his book, The Fred Factor, was a Wall Street Journal, Business Week, and New York Times bestseller. It's been 9 years since Mark introduced the world to Fred. See, this was his postman who delivered extraordinary service in a simple but remarkable way. And Fred's story inspired millions. Companies, even cities, were inspired to turn the ordinary into the extraordinary each day. Now, today, delivering extraordinary results is more important than ever. And so with Fred 2.0, Mark not only revisits the original Fred to gain new insights, but he also equips all of us with new strategies to achieve more. Welcome to the show, Mark Sanborn. Mark, thank you for joining the Entree Leadership Podcast again. How are you today?
I'm terrific, and it's great to be back. I sure enjoyed the last podcast, and I've been looking forward to this one.
Well, we're definitely glad to have you. For those that might be unfamiliar with you, tell us a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
Where do I begin? Well, I was born in a hospital at a very young age so I could be near my mother. Well, no, I am a speaker and author here in Denver, Colorado. I specialize in leadership, both through speaking, writing, and advising leaders, as well as focusing on how to turn the ordinary into the extraordinary. I've been involved as a professional speaker in the leadership development field now for 25 years, and I continue to write books and use other new means like social media to share good ideas with people who are interested about how to learn to lead or lead better, and how to take their business and lives to the next level.
Well, we definitely appreciate what you do. Now, I know we may have some people that aren't aware of The Fred Factor, the first book, which was a huge blockbuster success. And if we can, just give them a short recap of what is The Fred Factor and what is Fred?
Well, I'd be glad to. And for anyone that would like to read the story of the first Fred I ever met, they can do that for free at fredfactor.com. We kept that up because we knew some people may not have read the book, and since we've got a new book out called Fred 2.0, that's one way that people can get up to speed very quickly. But Fred is a postal carrier here in Denver, Colorado. His name is Fred Shea, and I met him when I moved to Denver back in the late 80s, and he just does an extraordinary job of delivering the mail. Now, putting mail in a box, delivering the mail, is pretty ordinary by most estimations, but Fred's made it artistry through the passion and creativity and commitment that he brings to it. So I say that Freds are people who choose to continually create new value for others through passion, creativity, and commitment. And that isn't just at work. That applies equally at home, in the community, at church, or wherever you are interacting with and being of service to others.
Well, and it's a powerful book because in there you keep talking about the extraordinary. You have one line in the book that says delivering extraordinary results is more important than ever, not only to obtain, but to get a competitive advantage. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Well, I'd be glad to. You know, we live in the age of exaggeration and hyperbole. I think that to be heard, people and businesses are making pretty outrageous claims and grandiose promises. Well, making a promise is far easier than delivering on it. And so choosing to be extraordinary isn't just about talking the talk. It's about walking the walk so that people know that you and your business are the real deal. That when you say you'll do something above and beyond the average or ordinary, that you really do deliver on that promise. And one of the things that I think has changed in our culture in the last maybe 10 or 15 years is, as someone with a background in selling, I used to believe that we had to promise value, and then when someone purchased our product or service, we had to deliver it. Now I think to have a true competitive advantage, we need to deliver value before someone chooses to do business with us. In other words, we need to look at ways that we can provide real value to people to demonstrate our ability to deliver before they choose to sign the contract or pull the trigger on doing business. And that's why in this age of exaggeration, it's so important that we really do find ways to go above and beyond the ordinary.
Well, I love in your book, you have a quote in here that says, if we aren't committed to continually delighting the important people in our business and in our lives, we run the risk that they'll go elsewhere. And I think that that's a huge lesson. So it puts it back on us as individuals to keep bringing the extraordinary.
We don't want our customers or clients to leave, but neither do we want our spouses or our kids to move away and never come back because they didn't get the kind of relationship that they so desired and needed when they were younger. And one of the things, Chris, that I love about life is that, and I've said this before to anyone that follows my work, truth is transferable. You know, we don't just have truth that applies in business and then some truth in personal and some truth in our physical fitness lives. Truth is always transferable, and if we can just find a way to apply the principle, you know, the application may change. It may have to be adjusted or adapted, but it's about finding those timeless truths, you know, the principles that serve us well in life.
Well, don't you think as leaders that it's important that we remain flexible, like we're able to change with the times, but we stay tried and true to the things that matter?
Well, I think flexible is important, but I think there's a new skill that leaders need, and that is agile. You know, flexible means you can bend without breaking, but agile is about your ability not to react, but to adjust, you know, to move quickly, to try new things. So I think we need both. I think we need flexibility so that those forces that we don't control, you know, the things that are bigger than ourselves, like the economy and regrettably, you know, the terrible terrorist acts that we're reminded of periodically, that they don't break us, that we are resilient. I think that's what flexibility enables. But I think that the next step is that we need to look for what we need to do, not just how we need to react. And that's what agility is. It's the ability to move quickly, try new things, and do what needs to be done.
I like that, being flexible and agile, being able to react to things. That's good. Now, Mark, the first book, you really laid out kind of the four principles of being a FRED, that everyone makes a difference, everything is built on relationships, you must continually create value for others, and it doesn't have to cost a penny, and you can reinvent yourself regularly. Now, that was in the FRED book. How is FRED 2.0, your new book, different?
FRED 2.0 is all new. It's not a revision or an update. And I think that's important for people to know because I wrote it in response really to two questions that I have been consistently asked since the first book came out in 2004. And the first was, hey, whatever happened to FRED? I mean, people really felt an affinity to FRED Shea, the real-life postal carrier. And in the first book, I didn't really develop his character deeply for the primary reason being that I didn't want to encroach on his personal life and privacy. And so in the new book, with his permission, I have an entire chapter that not only updates people about FRED, but goes deeper into why FRED does what he does, you know, kind of the philosophy that FRED brings to his work and now to this you know, philosophy system, which has been patterned after his example. The second reason that I wrote the book is because people kept saying, how do we keep it going? You know, we love the first book, we use the first book, but we're always looking for new ideas. Because even good ideas, if they're used over and over and over, even if they work for others, you know, we eventually tire of them a little bit. And a lot of people face, you know, discouragement. They don't get necessarily the support from their employer or the recognition from their customer. And so I wrote the book not just as a way to help people keep going with new ideas, but to keep going with encouragement. And I include a lot of stories that people have shared or that I've run across over the intervening years about ordinary people doing extraordinary things. So that's the reason why I wrote the book and what makes it different from the Fred Factor.
Well, I love the story in the book about you being at the airport. And someone talks to you about how the flight attendant was being a Fred. And that had to be a confirming thing for you to hear that this principle of Fred is spreading. Can you tell us that story?
And I don't even always know where it's being used. And by the way, Chris, sometimes I get a little bit of flack, you know, that the language is kind of hokey, the alliteration is kind of corny. And I realize that. But, you know, we live in a difficult time, and I think if we can talk about serious things but keep things light, you know, and inject a little levity, that the language we use is less important than the philosophy we embrace. If people choose to call it the Fred Factor, it's fun because there are so many people now who've read the book and know what that means. But even if at your company or in your own life you rearrange the way you talk about it, as long as you do it, that's what really matters.
I totally agree. Now, you have the Fred Factor, but you have the opposite of Fred as well. And I ran into that in the book, and I said, okay, I've got to get Mark to explain this. What's a DERF?
A DERF is someone who is the complete opposite of a Fred. And, of course, you know, DERF is Fred spelled backwards, and I use that word in fun because I don't want to label people, but we do meet people that seem to be, you know, 180 degrees opposite from Fred. They're indifferent. They don't bring any passion to their work. They don't do anything more than needs to be done to get by. And people kept saying to me, you know, how do we talk about those people? And I thought, well, why not just for fun, we'll call them DERFs. But basically, I think what's really challenging, maybe the most challenging aspect of this whole philosophy about being of greater service and creating greater value for others, is you can't make anyone be a Fred. You can encourage them. You can reward them, you can recognize them, and you can certainly and should demonstrate it in your own life. But you can't force somebody to do it, because then it isn't commitment, it's compliance. And to me, Fred is always about a choice. And I think that everyone has the potential to be a Fred. But there's a lot of people who, for different reasons, have become disenfranchised or disengaged and or cynical. And the best that we can do is encourage and recognize and reward and demonstrate. But I think people need to know, at the end of the day, you can't really make anybody do anything that they don't want to do. So we have to use indirect means to accomplish that.
Excellent. Now, obviously, your book, it hits on the customer service. It hits on that personal accountability side that we have to do. But the thing that I got from it was the section on passion. And you make a statement in here that I'd love for you to kind of expound on, if you would. You say that passion is important. And in chapter 5, you have this phrase, passion should come before profit. What do you mean by that?
I look at passion as the fuel and process as the engine. And I think that having passion without process or having process without passion are both less than desirable. You know, we can use a process to create a product or a service, but it's that passion, it's that zest or vitality or creativity or commitment that we add to the design, the manufacture, the packaging, and the delivery that sets one product apart from another. Just as passion is the difference between the Beatles, the original band, and the cover band, or U2, the originals and the cover band. I mean, the originator, the creator, I think by design always is going to be the source of original passion. The problem is that some people think passion is all it takes. They have the desire, but they don't have the means, and they think that just raw emotionalism is enough, and it's not. You know, it's like having a gallon of gas and no car. You know, it's going to weigh you down. It isn't going to serve you well. And the thing that, as much as I believe in passion, I just at the same time think that sometimes, you know, the beginning point, and more often than not, the beginning point of success in life is doing what needs to be done and then searching for or infusing the passion later. Because if you've got a lot of passion but you don't have a process or a path to follow, you're going to be probably more frustrated than you would be if you didn't have any passion.
Another thing you say in there is talking about that passion demands something from us. And that was enlightening to me, that you put in the book talking about passion comes from the Greek word suffering and submission.
Yes. And it's the difference between telling your spouse you love him or her and showing them.
Mm.
If your spouse says you're not passionate and you say, oh, boy, you have no idea how passionate I am. I think about you all the time and I long for you and I desire you. If you don't do anything to express that, it's not truly passion. Passion does demand of us. It lets us submit to that higher cause, that greater calling, and it's always observable. And it isn't just the observable kind of, you know, cliche passion of people who jump up and down and get excited and, you know, and act silly when they win a, you know, game show. It's about what you're willing to do to demonstrate your commitment.
I love that. Mark, what would you tell a leader or a business owner that for some reason, you know, life has happened, things have gone on, but they've seemed to have lost their passion? Can you get it back?
Well, I think you can, and it's not always easy. And by the way, sometimes we get our passion back, but we get it back about something different. And I think that's a important nuance that some leaders miss. You know, you can't assume that the same passion that got you to, say, start a business will sustain you to run the business. And you might need to bring in different management and move on to a different project. So the first thing I would advise a leader to do is to say, what are you truly passionate about? And to be honest, if the object of your passion has changed over time. And by the way, we can be obviously passionate about more than one thing. But if we're passionate about too many things, then that passion becomes diffuse and really doesn't serve us well. The other thing that I would encourage any leader to do is to look at, and it's actually dipping back into a book I wrote several books ago called The Encore Effect, that there are really four sources of passion, the most evident one being passion for what you do. But let me just quickly share, Chris, with the listeners, three other sources of passion. The second source of passion beyond what you do is why you do it, and that is the purpose behind your work. You know, sometimes you work hard to glorify God if you are a believer, or you work hard to bring home enough extra income to support a charity or a philanthropy. So the reason why can be a source of passion, even for those things that they themselves, we feel no passion for. The third kind of passion is for how you do something. It's that desire to make a system better or to improve a product or a service. And it sounds funny, but maybe your passion isn't about the process per se, but about improving it, about righting a wrong or dealing with an injustice. And then the final source of passion after the what, the why, and the how is the who you do it for. And that, to me, is what I call the safety net of passion, because all of us have people in our lives we feel deeply for, and if we can link our efforts to how it benefits and supports and provides and protects them, then we can find that reservoirs of passion that we didn't know we had.
That is very good. Thank you, Mark, for sharing that with us. You mentioned a story in the book about a lady being upset about there being no park. And you mentioned a phrase, irritation can be a great motivator. Do you see that today as much as yesterday?
I think so, but I worry that we stop at irritation and don't move on to application. You know, being irritated can make us angry, and it can make us complain and whine and moan. And that's just the first step, you know, noticing what bothers us. The real creative process, the real creative act of leadership is when we do something about it. Irritation can be a great motivator, and it can cause us to take action that we otherwise would never have taken. You know, it's that irritant that gets us off our rear ends and into action. The danger, however, is when that irritation is the beginning and ending point, and there's really no upside. All you do is, when you stay irritated, is you rehearse your regrets.
Mm. Very good. I know in business, for our entree leaders out there, they understand the importance of building relationships. And that's a key phrase and it's a catchphrase, but a lot of business leaders need to know, how do I begin to do this? How do I develop relationships that go beyond just the surface level, especially for customers? What are some tips or steps you could give us to help business leaders understand that I can go out and develop relationships in my community?
In the first book, The Fred Factor, I talk about the 7 B's of relationship building. And I think they're fundamental and foundational. You know, one of those is to be interested. It is hard to establish a relationship, a sincere and lasting relationship with people you don't genuinely care about. And one of my pet peeves is the phrase, you know, don't take it personally, it's just business. You know, when someone gives you their time or money, that's very personal. And so I think all business is personal. But what I wanted to do when I wrote Fred 2.0 was kind of go to the graduate level course on relationship building. And I talk about 5 words that you won't hear in business school. And I'm just going to talk about 2 of them in limited time. But the first one is kind of a good bridge between what we talked about in the area of passion. And that is to treat people with compassion. You know, come with passion, meaning that we use a care and a consideration that is extraordinary. It's the exact opposite of indifference. You know, it's about really giving people the benefit of the doubt, as we so readily do ourselves. It's about being as committed to their well-being as we are our own. And it's really, as squishy as this sounds, it's about having a soft heart. It's about not letting that the daily disappointments and the negative news make our hearts so hard that we can no longer feel for others, because that's what compassion allows us to do. The other of the 5 words in the new book that I really love, because it's been an area that I think and hope I continue to grow in, is redemption. And redemption is when you take what's wrong and you make it right. You take what's negative and make it positive. And in a relationship, it requires effort on our part to redeem a relationship that went south, a customer who left angry, or a friend who we disappointed. It's a very brave act of relationship building, because it makes us vulnerable. When we reach out and admit our culpability and ask for forgiveness, there's no guarantees. Sometimes we do that and the customer is still angry and stays gone, or the friend is still disappointed and the friendship never goes back to where it once was. But it's also incredibly gratifying that when we're willing to be brave like that, very often the customer isn't angry. They may or may not come back, and I'm not suggesting that we use redemption as a market or profitability tool. I'm just suggesting we use it because it's a powerful thing and it's the right thing to do. And so redemption is about taking the responsibility to ask, what is either wrong in my life that needs to be made right, or what relationships could be made better because of any impediments or obstacles that you've encountered in the past? So compassion and redemption, those are the graduate level words for people who really desire to build deep and lasting relationships.
And wouldn't you agree, Mark, that that relationship is really the key to success, not only in business, but in life?
Well, I agree that it is, because I don't think any of us succeeds alone. You know, even the truly self-motivated individual succeeds by their ability to create results with others, even if those others are just the people that buy from them or buy their ideas or their products or services. But, you know, the problem, Chris, is that we live in a time-compressed age where interactions have replaced much of what used to be relationships. You know, we're very transactional. It's about getting our needs met, getting the money made, getting the product delivered, and you have to make a little bit more space in your life if you want to go beyond the transaction to the relational.
Well, and Dave talks about that we're a company of crockpots, not microwaves. And as you're doing that, especially for customers, yeah, you're right. Everything can't be a priority. So you've got to make some space. I like that phrase, make space in your life. One more question for you. And this one is going to really center around the pivotal moment you had really in your life and in your business. I know at Entree Leadership, with Dave talks about that pivotal moment of him sitting at the card table, when his back was against the wall. When things weren't going well. And for you, what was the pivotal moment in your life when you decided to take this journey from the ordinary to the extraordinary?
At the time, I certainly wasn't thinking in terms of pivotal moments. It really didn't become clear to me for probably 10 or 20 or more years. But when I was 10 years old and I entered my first speaking competition, I did so badly and I was so humiliated at my first attempt to give a 3 to 5 minute public speech that I reached a very important decision tree. And I think that we all do this, not once in our lives, but at several different points in our lives. And the decision tree is where we make one of two choices. We either say, well, you know what, that didn't really matter, I don't care. And I've noticed that often when somebody says it doesn't matter, it really does, but it's a defense mechanism. It's a way to hurt less by saying that it doesn't matter. But I was lucky because at 10, for some reason, and I can't explain it other than it was probably a function of good parenting and my faith and my education, even though I was obviously very, very young, I made a decision that it really did matter, that I wanted to learn how to speak in public, that I wanted to become an effective communicator. And the reason that was so important is from a number of standpoints for me. Number one is I learned a process for learning. You know, I always say an average teacher teaches a subject. A good teacher teaches students how to learn, but a great teacher teaches students to love learning. And so I learned a process that I applied not just to public speaking, but to many areas of my life, a process of mastery. But the second reason that was so pivotal was because I found out how important influence in the spoken word is to leadership. So I kind of came in this back door of leadership by being exposed to the power of communication, the power of the spoken word and later the written word. And that's what got me started on my path of studying and learning and practicing leadership and now many years later sharing it with others. But I just want to emphasize, it began in abject failure, not in great success.
Wow. And in that failure, look what you have grown to. Mark, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to spend with us here on the Entree Leadership Podcast. You've given a lot of great information that I think leaders, business owners can apply to their lives and really themselves go from the ordinary to the extraordinary. So thank you very much for your time today, and we look forward to having you on this podcast again.
Well, thank you. I so appreciate the work that you do, and thank you for having me as a guest.
Thank you, sir. Take care. We want to thank Mark Sanborn for that incredible interview. He gave us a lot of information in that interview, a lot of things that we're able to apply to ourselves and also to our lives. And today I have Daniel Tardy, a vice president of Entree Leadership in studio. And Daniel, how are you?
Hey, man. Good. How are you?
Good to have you here.
Great interview.
Now, listen, you were sitting in on the interview as well. And tell me, what were the things that jumped out at you?
Well, I was taking a lot of notes. He's got a lot of good just one-liners, tweetable stuff, right?
Yes.
One thing I wrote down is you can't make anyone be a Fred, but we all have the potential to become one. And as leaders, I think that's important that we don't lose sight of the fact that everybody's got that potential to become a Fred. And it's easy to dismiss people based on their activity and based on their recent history and think, well, maybe they don't have it. Maybe we need to write them off and move on to the next person. And the reality is it's probably just a symptom of the circumstances that they're in right then. And as leaders, it's our job to awaken that Fred inside of everybody through that passion. When we bring passion to the game, that's what ignites other people's passion and causes them to, that's the catalyst, right?
Oh, I agree. Well, people follow passion. Mm-hmm. You know, people want to follow somebody that's going somewhere. You know, you don't want that leader that's just ho-hum. You know, the thing that jumped out at me, and like you said, he had a lot of things on there, but I like this. If you have to go beyond normal, right? Below normal is abnormal, and above normal is excellence. Mm. Now, I thought that's strong.
Yeah.
And I will be tweeting that out at some point.
It reminded me a lot of times in Entree Leadership, we talk about the importance of under-promising and over-delivering. And we're guilty oftentimes, especially when we're promoting something or selling something, that we hype it up and we talk about how big and great it is. And we set ourselves up for failure when we're coming in to deliver on those expectations, because we can't stretch that far. We've bit off more than we can chew, right? And it's like eating this giant steak dinner, and then by the time it gets to your stomach, you go, whoa, I ate too much. I can't handle this.
Yeah.
And we do that with our customers. We do that with our team. We got to be really careful as leaders that we don't promise things to our team that we don't have the bandwidth or the infrastructure to deliver on. And it's tempting in the moment to bring out the parade and talk about, hey, this is going to be fantastic. You're not going to believe it. But if we're mature, we can pull back and go, I'm going to save a little bit for the surprise. I'm going to hold a little bit back and deliver beyond what that expectation is. And that's what leaves people wowed.
Well, and it's important from a leader's credibility, right? You don't want to do too much and then come in under, because now your team's going to start to doubt what you're able to accomplish.
That's right.
Well, Daniel, I appreciate you being in. We're going to do something a little different. You're going to come in and each week and kind of talk to us about what's going on with Entree Leadership.
Yeah.
We're actually going to be able to hear directly from the leader of what's happening. So talk to us. What's going on?
Well, we got a lot of fun stuff coming up. One thing I want to make sure our listeners know about is our free e-coaching session that's coming up. We're starting to do these about every 2 weeks now, and this is a way that you can engage with our coaching team and get on a live e-coaching webinar demonstration. Ask some questions from our coach, John Felkins. I think you're going to join us on some of these coming up.
Yep.
So this is something that we want to, as an Entree Leadership brand, go beyond just the inspiration of the podcast and help the listeners turn the inspiration into activation. And so this is a medium where every couple of weeks you can log in and get an experience with our coaching team and ask some of the questions so we can tailor fit these principles to specific business pain points.
So that'll be via, like, it's a live chat?
Yeah, it's like a live chat webinar. You log in and there's some video and there's some Q&A. It's kind of a multimedia experience, and you can do it on your desktop, your iPad, your iPhone. Those are a lot of fun. So we're doing those about every couple of weeks. And to find out information on, because this is a podcast and someone might be hearing this the day it comes out or 3 months from now, but based on when they're listening, it's today for whoever's listening today. I'm confused.
Yeah, you just confused me.
Okay.
So where can I go to get information about that?
Well, we're doing these every couple of weeks, and if you go to entreeleadership.com, you can find out when the next session is going to be and register for that. It's a free session, but you do have to RSVP, and you can submit your questions so our coaching team can review those ahead of time. So entreeleadership.com, and they can hear all about that.
So the most important thing from that is understanding it is free. It's an opportunity to interact with the coaching team and grow yourself, which I think is very, very important.
That's right.
Entree Leadership, how can you stay connected?
Well, you can follow us on Twitter at Entree Leadership, and you're on Twitter also, tweeting up a storm all the time. How can they follow you?
I am. I'm at Chris Hogan 360.
360. What does that stand for?
It's a 360 degrees, where you're all the way around as a leader, whether you're dealing with money, business, or leadership.
You know, this is when I first saw your signature 360, I thought, oh yeah, one every day of the year. But that's 365.
That's 365, yeah. Daniel.
I'm dense.
Yeah. Okay. Well, math is not your.
No.
Okay. All right.
But passion, I've got that part.
You got passion. Okay. Now listen, I know you've also got not only the podcast, but you have an opportunity online with a newsletter.
Yeah, and this newsletter, guys, I can't tell you how content rich this is. We put so much information in there, and it comes out every 2 weeks. And for example, this time, Mark Sanborn actually gave us a bonus, like an encore lesson that he's teaching. And so the place that we get that out to our listeners is we just drop a link into our newsletter. And so if you want to stay plugged in with everything that Entree Leadership has to offer, lots of great content, these special bonus premium things that come from our guests that are on our podcast, be sure you're signed up for our newsletter. You can go to the DaveRamsey.com website and then search newsletter and you'll find us there. There's a whole list of all our company newsletters, but be sure to check the box for Entree Leadership.
Well, and I know there are a lot of good topics and additional information coming out on that newsletter, so you will definitely want to sign up for that so you can continue to grow yourself as a leader. Now, Daniel, I've seen a lot of emails flying around. We've got a major event getting ready to happen with Entree Leadership, the Entree Leadership Master Series.
Right.
What is it and where is it going to be?
Well, our May event is sold out. It's been sold out for a while. And we're currently, as we're recording this episode, coming into that event. And we've got 150 people that are going to be here at our conference center.
Wow.
With Dave teaching. They're going to get a front row seat to the whole Entree Leadership culture where it all started. And Dave and our team and our leaders, you're going to speak a couple lessons for that. And so that's a really exciting event. We get a lot of business owners that come in from all over the country. We do this a couple times a year. I would do it 10 times a year if we could, but Dave is busy.
He's got a few things going on.
He gives us 2 weeks, so we make the best of it. But the next one is coming up in the fall. Registration is open. It's November the 3rd through the 9th. That's also here at our office. We had such a great response to this one here in our office, and business leaders said, we love to come and see your business. We want to see the inner workings. We want to see behind the scenes, see what you guys are doing. Sit in your boardrooms and your offices and sit down and do coaching sessions with your leadership team.
They love the tours.
Yeah.
I mean, you get a chance to go through the building, see the different departments, right? And then see Dave on air. But you also do something different with the Entree Master Series. And as far as the radio show, tell them.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So Dave teaches all week, and we have all these great experiences, and we'll host you and show you the Southern hospitality and show you our town here in Nashville. And it's a lot of fun, a lot of good networking. But then the culmination of the whole week is all 3 hours of the Dave Ramsey Show are broadcast live on site from Entree Leadership Master Series. And you get to participate as the live audience. And that normally the show is about personal finance and money, but this one is all about small business. And Entree Leadership is the voice of hope for small business owners. And so that's a really cool chance for us to broadcast the message of Entree Leadership Principles across this country. And Entree Leadership Principles are going out to business leaders all over the place. And you get to be a part of that when you come to this event.
Now, that's going to be November 3rd through 9th. Now, that's got to sell out quick.
Yeah, usually a couple months early. It's a high-end event, so it's pretty expensive. It's a big investment. But for the right person who's looking to grow himself, grow his team, and grow his profits, and really take things to the next level, it's a fantastic opportunity. So we encourage people to get their seats locked in early. And if you want to get more information on that, just go to EntreeLeadership.com. Or you can just call our team here at 888-227-3223 and ask about Entree Leadership Master Series.
Well, Daniel, thank you for coming in.
Yeah,
I appreciate
my pleasure.
You updating us on all the things happening with Entree Leadership. It's been a pleasure to have you here, and
Thanks.
I look forward to having you next time.
Great episode.
Thank you. Well, I want to thank our team for making this Entree Leadership podcast happen. Colin Fatke, our audio engineering genius. Becky Powell, our talented and focused producer. And we definitely want to thank our guests, Mark Sanborn, and of course, Dave Ramsey. Thank you for tuning in to the Dave Ramsey Entree Leadership podcast. Listen, you want to stay plugged into this Entree Leadership stuff. You want to do that so you can grow yourself, grow your team, and grow your profits. Until next time, keep learning and keep leading.